Any good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm just proud that I knew what day it was. Honestly, right before I hit the on button, I was like, what is today again?
It's Wednesday.
Last night. Yeah, today's Wednesday. So I'm glad that I was able to figure that out before I said, and a good Tuesday morning. Tuesday was yesterday.
Takes a while.
And a good Wednesday morning to you.
It's Wednesday.
Yeah, there you go.
Weddings.
Play it down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Play it safe.
It's called Wednesday because everybody had weddings on the middle of the week. That's why it's called Wednesday.
Okay. That's why it's called. Why is it called Hump Day?
I'm gonna leave that alone.
Let's see. If you're gonna be clever, I want to see how clever you're gonna be. Whoa, we've got a malfunction. I bring up Hump Day, and we got all kinds of bad stuff going on.
Broke the mic. This is why we can't have nice things.
Today is the 20-year anniversary of what? Today is January 8th, 2020.
That would be the
January 8th, 2000.
Home run throwback. Does that ring a bell? Is that,
that
on the right track?
That is, yes, that's official term.
The Music City Miracle.
The term that fans like to use is the Music City Miracle. Yeah. Yep. 20 years. Jeff Fisher's coming on today at 11 o'clock. Good timing.
It's going to be good. Talk to Coach. Home run throwback. I said, Alan, go get Mace. Mace is knocked out. Okay. Let's get Dyson. Good.
By the way, they showed that on NFL Network, and it is official. Derek Mason, who pretends like kickers' lives don't matter. They showed the 04, the 03 season, 04 playoffs in Baltimore. He absolutely was the first person to hug Gary Anderson.
Totally.
I mean, he gave him a Craig partner ball hug, and he acts like kickers' lives don't matter. Come on.
It's hanging in Nissan Stadium, and I tell him that all the time. I mean, I'll send him the picture. Be like, when I hear you complain about kickers, I just want you to look at this picture.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Mason, because of travel, you guys are going to be heading to Chicago tomorrow in the United Center to take on the Blackhawks. Chris Mason will join us in the next segment. There's been a lot of news. Obviously, we're going to get into that in just a moment. Jeff Fisher, as I just mentioned, at 11 o'clock. David Poyle at 11:30. We told you he was not going to join us yesterday for his weekly, but would join us this week. This week is today at 11:30. Tim Hasselbeck, his weekly chat at noon, and Ian Eagle at 1 o'clock. So we've got a loaded.
Now, this is truly
loaded show.
This is a who's who.
Hello.
Today. Wow.
Yeah.
Did that get your attention?
And
that's a lineup.
And you can win Preds tickets today.
And that.
I mean, we're bringing it.
Today is a good day. Was it a good day last night as we sit here and watch the highlights on NHL Network? Was this on the fly? Yeah. 6-2 Bruins last night. So the first game for new head coach John Hines. I also believe he is going to be, I think I heard Braden and D-May say that he's going to join them tomorrow morning.
Yeah, he'll do coffee with coach.
Coffee with coach. That's a neat concept. Where does that come from?
See, you beat me to it. I was about to say that's a great concept that somebody came up with. I was going to set you up, and you had to go in there and take the thunder.
Go in there and just steal our from you.
I got your back. You're my teammate. Okay, I'm here to pump you up. Willie's your coach.
Here. Is this a Saturday Night Live skit?
Yes.
We're here to pump you up.
I want to pump you up. Yeah. So anyway,
I'm going to ask Chris Mason about what we're watching right now. Skills and I talked about this. We had Jarrett Tinordi in postgame last night, and I brought up his fight with Clifford and then what Trennan did to Chara last night. Hal's gone up against Chara. He knows. He said Yakov Trennan, whether he knows it or not right now, he will quickly figure out he immediately just got street cred in his own locker room and around the league. Immediately. Like, now all of a sudden people are going to be like, okay, here, you can have the space. I'm really not going to push back. It's the way it works. Charles is a
You know it's
pretty mean
it's
dude.
Noteworthy.
He's 6'9".
People were taking the clip of the fight and circulating it around the league. It wasn't just Predator fans and, hey, did you see what Trennan did from the Predator's perspective? It was there were people in Canada.
Would you
and
drop
Vancouver.
Chara? It goes viral.
I mean, he really clipped him for that one shot. That was a good one. Now, he took a couple. Chara got a couple shots in there, too.
Chara's going to get his shots.
He's going to get some shots. As Hal said, if you lean over, which is what happened early.
Or lean down. Be careful. Don't put your head down. Yeah.
The uppercut's coming.
Yeah, and he's 6'9".
Yeah. But, man, did he hang in there and deliver some shots. After he just barreled over. That's what started. He had a legal check against McAvoy, just knocked him. He de-iced him.
He creamed him.
Yeah. That guy's a player.
I really like what I see out of him.
He's going to stick. He's going to be around for a while.
And Tenorti, of course, has played with him in Milwaukee. Nothing surprises him. He's seen it. Speaking of Milwaukee.
We got people already wanting their way in.
Our Milwaukee resident, Trevor, is on the line. Trevor, what's up?
I was so excited last night. I couldn't wait for you guys to get on the air today and talk about my boy Trennan. How awesome was that?
That went viral pretty quickly.
Oh, man. I was watching Twitter as it happened, and it just all of a sudden you just saw the clips that were like you guys were saying. And yeah, I've been saying it the whole season. Robo Trennan is here to stay.
Unfortunately for you, Trevor, I'm not sure when you're going to see Yakov again.
Do you know what's funny? I hope he stays in Nashville. As much as I love seeing him in Admirals gear, I think he's shown over the years. You know, when he first came here to Milwaukee, he was he looked like he was a bit slow. And I've always said that he looked like RoboCop because the way that he skates back and forth, he looks like he's just like a cyborg. But just this year alone, he's just shown that he deserves to be in Nashville. And you know, I can't wait to see what he does for the rest of the season there. I think he should stay. I think he's awesome. But when he buckled Chara last night, I was screaming at the top of my lungs to the point that my wife yelled at me because I was about to wake up the kids.
Well, I'll tell you what. Most guys, they wouldn't have buckled. They would have dropped like a sack of potatoes. That just tells you how he really got. I mean, Chara is one tough dude.
But that hit on McAvoy that he – oh, man.
Yeah.
That was almost just as good as him fist fighting with Chara.
Well, Chara was not going to let Trennan skate away. That was very clear. He just basically grabbed him and bear-hugged
him. And he was willing
him.
To take the penalty to do it because he knew he was going to be penalized extra for that.
He did. I think
take good care of him for us because he deserves to be there.
No doubt.
Hey, I don't think he's going anywhere.
I guess you'll just have to come to Nashville to watch him play.
I was hoping to see him at the Winter Classic, but that didn't happen.
Yeah. It's too bad. Sorry, Trevor. Thanks for the call. Guy. Yeah.
Is he this year's Rocco Grimaldi? The guy that he gets in the lineup and he's not going to give his spot back?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Kind of feel like it's leaning that way.
Colin Blackwell's done pretty well too, but
he has.
Both have really impressed.
Well, and look, here's another thing, and I was listening to you
Trennan
guys.
What Trennan brings is the team needs.
Yes.
Because he's got the speed. It's one thing to be big, but you have to be big and be able to skate.
Yep.
And he's chipping in. It's not like he hasn't gotten shots. He's got some
scored.
Points. He's getting points.
He's got a couple goals.
Yeah. Well, and I was listening to you and Hal last night, you know, going through. I mean, we know nothing about John Hines' system from one game. We know nothing. We were never going to know anything after last night. But he's going to change the lineup. I mean, there are going to be different players that fit his scheme that maybe didn't fit Peter Laviolette's. And, you know, Yakov Trennan, Colin Blackwell, those guys that you mentioned, I mean, they could benefit from this. Time will tell. We'll see. But he might look at them as players that fit more of what he's trying to do and what they need. And then you have to decide what to do with the guys that are left over and who those guys are. But I think today is a really exciting day for this franchise because it's the first practice, and that's when you really start to implement the new things that they're going to do.
Yep, we can ask David Poyle how much is that going to change his approach over the next 6 weeks on, you know, what he needs to do.
Yeah.
What kind of conversations he needs to have with other general managers around the league. Let's go to Doug. Doug, what's up?
Guys, I will always remember January the 8th because I was at the Music City Miracle. Fortunately, sitting with the, I guess, significant others of the Buffalo Bills girlfriends or whatever, because my girlfriend at the time was smart enough to send to New York to get tickets, and those tickets, I guess, were the unused tickets of the Bills, and that's where I sit.
Really?
I'd snuck in a few drinks and put them in the cup holders right there, the blue seats at the time, and they said, are these for us? And I said, yeah, it's just a ball game. We're all fortunate friends, and as the game went on, you know, we'd score, they'd score, and they were drinking my drinks, and then when they went ahead, it's kind of like they turned their backs and were like, you know, we'll show them we're better than they are, and the attitude changed, and then the miracle happened, and you could see just like it sucked the air out of them, and then when the swift kick that they tried to finish the game with, you know, the game was over, and I leaned over and I said, hey, I hope you enjoyed those drinks and buckle up on the way home.
So you stayed. You did not exit like a lot of people.
No, no. And what's even crazy is back in the day, you remember the Sony Watchman, the black and white TV?
Mm-hmm.
With the antenna, telescoping antenna. I had one of those. And when they were deciding whether or not the play was real or not, I had my TV and I was sitting there looking at it and everybody asked what's going on because I was listening, watching and everything. And I said, they're thinking it was a bad pass. So as I'm sitting there watching it and the official's right in front of me looking through the hood, everybody's leaning over my shoulder so aggressively. I had to put my foot on the rail because they were watching my TV as they were replaying the play. So finally, it was just so many people proud of me. I kind of got nervous because I was about to push me on the field. And I could see the official mouthing, it's good. And it's like the place erupted again when he said, play stand. And I was watching it on my Sony Watchman with the significant others of the Buffalo Bills.
Good story.
I put in my top three.
Good story. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Graham.
We will certainly get into all that and more with Jeff Fisher at 11 o'clock. Can you imagine if we had social media back then, what that play would have done?
Man.
If we had Twitter?
Well, both sides. But think about the explosion from the Titans fans, the outrage from the Bills fans, and then everybody in the middle trying to analyze and give camera angles and freeze frames and, you know, here's Dyson's foot and here's the ball and here's Wycheck's arm. I mean, it would have been nuts.
No question. It would, right. It, just 20 years ago, people don't realize how different. We didn't have all these channels.
Yeah.
We didn't have social media. Didn't have, there wasn't Twitter and Facebook and all that. And
I would have quit Twitter on that day. Because it would have been nuts.
It would have been.
I almost quit it yesterday, but.
Really?
Yeah. It got exhausting.
Are you going to save that for Friday? You got something for Friday?
No, well, you know, I'm going to be on a plane for
Baltimore. Oh, that's
right.
You won't be here at noon.
Yeah, we should probably announce that I'm actually going to Baltimore to cover the game. So,
well, let's do that. Oh, wait a minute. You just did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I mean, it's not a big announcement. We don't need, like, fanfare and music and stuff. Just.
When do you want people to meet you at the airport? What time?
Yeah. Anytime.
Send off? Is there a
send off?
There's. We're going to get some Pred flags, Titans flags.
You going to
our listeners would
you
do
go
that
into
too.
Signature?
No.
Blue Raider flags.
Titans flags. Chase flags.
Oh, all right, we'll come back with Chris Mason.
We're silly today.
We will do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appropriate music to bring in Chris Mason, who joins us every Wednesday, usually at 1 o'clock. But today, they're heading to Chicago, United Center. Tomorrow night against the Blackhawks, Chris Mason on the line with us, Willie's TV partner, driven by Freeland Chevrolet. See, Mace, what's up?
Not a lot. Just getting ready, packing. Little pack today, so not too time-consuming, but just putting the final touches on getting the bag ready and all that kind of stuff. How are you guys doing?
Well, because you guys get to come back briefly, right, before you head back to the peg?
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yes, it's very nice.
Nothing against the fine folks in Winnipeg. They're good people.
Hey, I was on radio with them yesterday talking about this.
I was in Edmonton. You were in Winnipeg.
Well, let's ask Mace. How many radio interviews did you do yesterday?
Oh man, it was like nonstop after our production meeting in the morning. I think I did one the night before, one before. I probably did almost close to 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of talking. I'm surprised my voice held up during the game.
Well, thank you for making us 11, because that's a lot of interviews.
Well, we're his favorite
on a game.
Yeah, these, of course, you guys, goes without saying.
I mean, Willie's his TV partner. I helped him get on Twitter. I don't really know what you did.
Really? But, you helped him get on Twitter?
This is just friends having a conversation.
I named a dog after him.
Well, you did. That's true. Yeah.
So up top
That is factual.
I had 11 years
that's
of
not a gag.
A toy fox terrier named Mason because of Chris Mason.
That's real.
And he
that's
had a, his son a day after my daughter was born.
Exactly. Exactly. boy, yeah. Chase just walked out of the room like, dang it. I thought I had him.
I got owned.
It happens, buddy. Even at the constable once in a while.
I know. Every now and then.
See, he thought he was Chara, and then next thing you know, he got bustled.
See, you know, Hal checks me into the boards at the Winter Classic, and it wakes something up in me, and so I'm trying to be a little spunkier. And
I like that.
How about that
like
segue? That. Right into Trennan and Chara. So,
good.
Hal Gill, we had Jared Tenorti in Barrel House with us last night post game, and I brought up his fight with Clifford, and you know, just, and he's been playing with Trennan, and of course we got into the Chara stuff. Barrel House erupted. Of course, I knew that was going to be a fan favorite. And Hal said Trennan may not realize this right now, but he just got major street cred, not only in his room but around the league, because when he shows up in Chicago tomorrow, they'll all know. Like, things are going to change for Trennan, and he'll figure that out quickly. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts, first of all, I really can't say enough good things about how he's playing and how he's done since he's been called up. I just love his game. I really think the Predators absolutely need that element. But the fight alone, I cannot believe he did it. I really, honestly, you know, I don't even know if he knew for sure, because he went in and he just blew up. Was it McAvoy, Louis?
Yes.
It was McAvoy. Blew up McAvoy, like, just absolutely crushed him. And then Chara grabbed from behind. I don't know if he knew. Maybe he did. You're talking about a freakish human being, 6'9", 250. And then he didn't even hesitate. He dropped the mitts with Zdeno Chara and got the decision. Like, he buckled Chara. So, like, people will definitely take note. And it's just so funny when you look at the two, and I was saying on air, like, Trennan's such a baby face, soft-spoken, nice kid off the ice, and he plays just like a vicious tank out there. And for him to do that, like, everyone around the league that saw that probably said, oh, my God, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, and if I could – I love thought bubbles. When they showed him on the Jumbotron last night sitting in the box, my thought bubbles were, man – he, like, messed up my jersey. Like, that. It's like, you just fought Chara and you just dropped him in. It's like he was mad that Chara, like, kind of, like, ripped his jersey or something. So
yeah.
He was, like, mad, right? Those were my thought bubbles of his expression. Like, man, I think he pulled my collar down. My jersey's all messed up.
Oh, it was unreal. And it's just, he's been doing such a good job. I just think definitely making a name for himself. No question about that.
Well, let's talk about that. Because of injuries, because of circumstances, and Milwaukee's success, which means a lot of players are doing well in Milwaukee, they've had the opportunity to get call-ups, and they're getting a lot of playing time, including Trennan, who's been productive. And we have a loyal listener, Trevor, who listens in Milwaukee to our show every day. He's a huge Admirals fan. He goes to every game. And he just called us in the first segment, Chris, and said, I think we've probably seen the last of Yakov in Milwaukee for a while. He's probably in Nashville to stay. What do you make of some of these young guys getting these opportunities, and who do you think can make the most of it? And we've seen this story before where they make the most of it and they don't go back.
Well, you know, exactly. Happened to Austin Watson, happened to a lot of these guys. UC Saros is, you know, like you said, go up and down the list. But I really think, how do you take him out of the lineup? He's effective. If he's not getting on the score sheet, which he's doing at a pretty good pace for the amount of games he's playing and the role he's playing, he's getting scoring chances. He's getting in on the forecheck. He's absolutely crushing guys. He's making plays. He's playing the majority of his shifts in the offensive zone. He just buckles Zdeno Chara. He adds that element, which immensely helps out a guy like Austin Watson, who's, you know, probably taking on all of that without Trennan and Tenorti there. So it makes him tougher and stronger and more effective. I just think it's, you know, it gets to be a numbers game. I get that. And when guys get healthy, then there's going to be a lot of tough decisions, because I think Colin Blackwell is playing great too. So he's another guy that's come in and really, you know, got that opportunity and been effective when he's out there. He's that grinder type. He's same thing. He's fearless, goes to the net hard. He doesn't back down. He gets on the forecheck. He doesn't try to do anything too fancy. He's effective in his game. So I these guys are what a coach wants, right? What an organization wants. They've developed in terms of Trenin. He's, you know, drafted, played a few years in Milwaukee. He's NHL ready. I mean, you know, it's still a small sample size, but from what we've seen, what I've seen, starting in training camp in summer to now, man, he's a player.
Chris Mason is with us, and Mesa, you know, I think you never believe that there's no chance you can win, but you knew last night was going to be difficult in the circumstances that they were in. It's almost like they had to be willing to take a step back forward, just take what they could get last night in order to take the big leap forward, or take a step back to take the big leap forward here. So today's practice will be a very important practice, in my opinion, with John Hines coming in. And Hal Gill said it very well, I thought, with Darren on the postgame show. The players know that they've got to make some changes, so the players should welcome the changes, right? And last night was a perfect example of why the changes need to be made.
Yes, they will 100% welcome. At the end of the day, you know, the players are looking for guidance. They want to win. They want to do whatever it takes to win. And, you know, this has been a really tough season. So I think, you know, having gone through a midseason coaching change, everyone's open. You want to hear the new philosophies, the new message, and you're going to buy in. This is a good group of people. These are very receptive players. You know, you don't have any egos in that room. You know, you don't have any of those issues, contrary to what Twitter says at times. These are guys that have been friends, teammates for a long time. They've had a lot of success together. They've grown up together in this league and in Milwaukee. They will be looking forward to today as well. And it re-energizes you as a group too. You have new ideals, new things to work on, and new goals to set. And you know, before practice, I'm sure they're going to have some lengthy meetings over the next little while, starting today before practice. Giving John Hines, because he's got to get acclimated with the coaching staff as well, and he's got to talk to them about what's going on and kind of bringing them up to speed on what he likes to do in certain situations. So it's going to be a long process, but definitely today is a big day for John Hines and for the team as well.
Yeah, John Hines said, I'm looking forward to practice, and he said, I'm looking forward to the morning skate on Thursday. He's got to use all the time he can to start this. And so I asked you this on the broadcast last night, but there's not a whole lot of time to elaborate on it. But how do you implement a system? He's sort of making it sound like it's not going to be anything more than tweaks. But I think we know, and Hal certainly echoed this, that it's going to be different, right? So how long does it take to actually implement it?
Well, you know, these guys, you know, they know hockey, right? So they're professionals. So a lot of times it's you tell them, you give them the framework of the tweaks, whatever that may be. If it's something in the neutral zone, the defensive zone, the way that they want to forecheck, whatever that may be, you draw it up, you explain it, you talk about it, you take questions from the guys, you know, in certain positions. If it's a left winger has a different responsibility in the zone, or if you have your defense more stationary and taking care of the net front, or whatever the case may be. But you have those discussions, and then you go through it out on the ice just to get that muscle memory back, because, you know, these guys have been playing a certain way for a long time, and it takes time to kind of curb your instincts, you know, if you're going to chase someone all the way up the wall instead of, you know, handing them off to the forward or whatever the case may be. But it just takes time to get that muscle memory, just so that's your automatic instinct and that's the way you play. So you have the conversations, you draw it up on the board, you maybe show some videos, some examples, and then you go and you work on it in practice, and you keep doing it until it becomes the way you play. So today's the start of that process.
We're talking to Chris Mason. Of course, you can watch him with Willie on Fox Sports Tennessee. He joins us every Wednesday. Rob Scuderi comes on board as an assistant coach, and I thought that was an interesting move because not only is he a former player, which I think there's a benefit to that, but also played defense, and that's been an area that the Predators need to improve this year. How beneficial is it going to be having a former player on the bench with these guys?
It's going to help a lot, you know, and he's just, you know, removed from the game. He's going to have it's a good sounding board for guys, and he can relate to the players at their level, And I'm not saying the other guys could or couldn't, because they played hockey and Dan Lambert played. But, you know, you have a guy that's a Stanley Cup winner that will talk to them more at their level. And he's, you know, he's been in player development. He's been working with the guys in Milwaukee. So it's a good sounding board or someone that you can go to and just kind of be off the record, where you're not, you don't feel like you're necessarily talking to a coach, although you are. And it's nice to have that as a player too. It's a good way to vent. It's a good way to ask questions. And I think his experience, especially two Stanley Cups and the way he played, and he was a fierce competitor, great defensive defenseman, you know, and that's kind of more the mentality I think that, you know, these guys are going to need. And I think it'll be beneficial for him. And he's, you know, he's new to coaching as well. So I'm sure he's going to be learning as he goes here as well. But he definitely has a wealth of experience in the minors and especially in the NHL and two Stanley Cups. So it's a great resource for the Predators.
Chris, you know, from playing the position, that goalies are creatures of habits. And, you know, Pecorino obviously has been here for a very long time. How important was it to maybe change some philosophies with the head coach, but keep some consistency with Ben Vanderklok as the goalie coach?
Well, Ben Vanderklok is, I've got to talk to him a ton over the last, you know, 5 years, 4 years since being here, and he is one of the best guys. Just the attention to detail, the way that he knows, you know, when to press the guys and when to lay off a little bit. He's really learned the mental side of dealing with an NHL goaltender, and I think that's important, because you know, aside from this year, obviously, he just has an amazing track record. He's been a huge part of UC Saros's development. He's had him, you know, the entire time he's been in the organization. So that's one thing that, you know, you don't look to change. Although this season's been a little bit up and down, Ben Vanderklok has just been, he's been awesome. And so that helps the goaltenders too, because, again, I know from my experience, when you have a goalie coach that you love and you trust, and it's a very unique, it's more of an intimate relationship with, you know, the two goalies and the goalie coach opposed to the head coach and the rest of the team. It's very one-on-one. You're cutting video all the time. You're doing individual drills on the ice, and Ben's their soundboard. So any concerns or any, you know, when they're going through a tough time, they use each other, obviously, but Ben Vanderklok is a very important piece in that equation, no question. So that was a great thing. I didn't expect that would happen anyway, but it was awesome to see him, and that's very important for this team moving forward.
Chris, I know you've been spending the last 48 hours doing interviews, but have you had a chance to talk to people that you may know about John Hines and learn a little more about him? I know you, of course, remember Ray Shiro and Tom Fitzgerald from their time here, but what have you been able to learn about John Hines?
Just that he is, I've heard nothing but good things, and this is from some of the people that I did interviews, that he's a very open guy. He's strict, but he's firm. Sorry, not strict. He's firm, but fair. He builds relationships with his players, and he gets, you know, you heard his interview with Willie, which is, I thought, a really good introduction to who John Hines was and what he values as a coach. And it's those, you know, one-on-one kind of personal relationships, which goes a long way. I'm not saying any of the coaches before didn't do that or they don't do that, but this is, you know, John Hines' message. And that's what I was told yesterday by a bunch of people that I talked to, because I don't know much about him personally. He's very detailed in his systems. He demands and expects guys to play a certain way, but all good things and really, really positive feedback about John Hines. And that's, you know, I didn't hear anything bad, put it that way. So, and that's pretty rare when you talk about coaches, because there's always someone that, you know, has something to say, you know, negative about their situation. But I didn't hear anything negative about John Hines, all positive. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he implements into this team, what he changes up, and just his presence. I think so far he's done a great job handling the media. I thought after the game, it was a tough game, and, you know, just the fact that, you know, he's excited to get back in the league and work with the team with the talent that this Predators team has. It's going to be it's going to be a first for him in the NHL, because he's coming from a team that, you know, was in a constant rebuild, and he had to take that more of development mindset and teaching mindset instead of a team that's ready to go. So looking forward to seeing what he does with them.
Appreciate the visit as always. Enjoy the road trip. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll talk soon.
All right. That is Chris Mason, Predators TV analyst, there in the booth with Willie on Fox Sports Tennessee. And remember, tomorrow night is NBC Sports Network, but you guys will be on the air, Fox Sports Tennessee. So if you're listening to this, you're going to choose local coverage.
And Pierre McGuire will join us tomorrow at 10:15 to talk about everything. He's been very nice to come on with us a lot lately.
Yeah, he has.
But we'll have him again tomorrow to get his thoughts on all the changes.
There you go, C-Mace, driven by Freeland Chevrolet every Wednesday on the program. We'll come back more of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Chris Mason, as always. Jeff Fisher coming up at 11. David Poyle at 11:30. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase, Pierre LeBrun has caught up with Peter Laviolette and put out an article on The Athletic. Did you guys see this?
I did.
Peter Laviolette opens up about his dismissal, fond Nashville memories, and what comes next. What did you make of the article?
Well, I thought that Peter Laviolette, you know, so closely removed from this happening,
yeah,
I thought it was remarkable that he, you know, I have to believe it's natural for any coach in the, you know, say 48 hours, especially, it's got to be pretty raw, right? The shock, the devastation, the, you know, getting pulled out of the fight. Now, it's happened to him before, but I he said some really classy things in this article. I mean, he said nothing but really good things about the whole organization, specifically David Poyle, and basically put it out there, you know what, I'll get back in. When there's an opportunity, if somebody wants me, I'll jump in there.
He'll have it. I mean, he'll have it next season if he wants it.
I think there's a really good chance that he will.
I don't think it's as emphatic as you're making it out to be, like, oh, it's a no-brainer.
Oh, I think it's a no-brainer.
For him, but I mean, you're acting like some team, for sure, like 100%. Yes.
Look at his track record. He's taken three different teams to the Stanley Cup final. How are you not going to at least call him and have an interview with him?
I don't know.
Especially if you're Seattle, because there is a ton of pressure on Seattle coming in as an expansion team, because Vegas went to the Cup final their first year, which nobody should expect Seattle to do. But they're still they're thinking, their fan base is like, oh, okay, the way these rules work, same set of rules that Vegas had, we got to do this.
I'm not saying you're off. I'm just saying you're acting like it is a no-brainer that teams are going to be lining up for him. I think
it's a no-brainer.
He's also had stops every 3, 4, and 5 years, right?
Okay.
I mean, this was the longest one.
Right. And what happened in year?
Each stop.
You're right. Yeah. Each stop. He's early each on, stop. The first 2 years, you know, well, at least the track record shows, it's going to be really good.
Yeah. Because if I polled all the Nashville fans and I said, hey, here, this is how I have a time machine, and so I went and I looked, and I'm going to tell you how this is going to turn out, that in year 3 of Peter Laviolette, your team's going to the Stanley Cup final. I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen, but I'm going to tell you that they're going to the Stanley Cup final. Every one of them would sign up for it.
Well,
every fan base would sign up for that.
When they made the change from Barry Trotz, as much as I think the fan base loved Barry Trotz, they were ready for a change. And it had nothing to do with Barry Trotz not being a good coach, right? But it was time.
That's proven.
That's been proven. If you had the time machine, that would be 100% proven, right? And I think we all knew that when Barry Trotz was let go here, he would get another opportunity somewhere, and we know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So for Peter Laviolette, I think that's a really interesting point. Like, if you'd have said the day he was hired, okay, this guy has been fired a couple times, but he's won, that would you take 5 really good years, a Stanley Cup final, two division titles, a President's Trophy, but they're going to can him after 5.5 years? You would have said, heck yeah. Are you kidding?
We were pretty consistent. I was pretty consistent with a message for 4 hours yesterday. For all the people that were ready for a change, okay, you got your change, but don't just dismiss the 5.5 years. The 5.5 years were really, really good. If I said it once, I said it once every hour of the show yesterday. Do not dismiss what just happened on his watch. Going to the run to the Stanley Cup final goes without saying. But a President's Trophy, never been done. Two division titles, never been done. So there was a whole lot of good. By the way, playoffs every year.
Yeah, every year.
Never missed the playoffs.
There was never a time in the second week of April we were talking about all the 16 teams that were in the Stanley Cup playoffs and none of them named the Nashville Predators. Okay, so that's really, really good. Okay, so there was a lot of good. So we said that yesterday. I think it was more about how quickly you came out and just like 100%. Oh, there's no doubt he's going to have another job.
Well, don't the thing that you can't
predict. Because I feel that way.
As a head coach.
But you can't, I feel that way.
But we can't know what jobs will open specifically. And when those jobs open, that's when the people start lining up. But I would be tending to go, I don't know if I can't go 100%. But
yeah,
I think there's a very good likelihood that somebody will say, well, look what he's done here, 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 and here.
Like, even if
his specialty is turning around teams.
The quick turnaround. That's the special. The specialty is the quick turnaround.
Let's just look at some potential jobs that could open up. Anaheim and Los Angeles, I'll say no, because they just made hires not long ago. San Jose, boogeyman, as much as we love him.
Yeah, he's an interim.
He's an interim. So that's a possibility. Okay. Chicago could be open again.
We went with the young guy. They'll probably let him ride for a while.
But you guys know this, that GMs all of a sudden change their mind when somebody becomes available. And when you look at the coaches that are currently available on the market right now, is Peter Laviolette not at the top of the list, or at least towards the top?
I think he's going to be towards the top of the list, if not the top. Here's
Detroit.
The thing.
I mean, Detroit would be a huge reclamation
I'll
project.
I'll tell you what, that's an interesting one.
The question is, would he be interested?
There's a lot of good things going on with that history.
Well, that would put the 2 to 3 year window in
Montreal.
That would be quite the test.
Montreal is an interesting one.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, the thing that jumps out at me, besides the kind things he said about David Poile, which I thought was really something. Like in the moment, it would be easy to say, you know, I'm just not ready to talk about it yet, and then come back years later and speak finally. But in the immediacy to say all the things he said,
was
good. But the other quote that I thought jumped out at me was, he understands the nature of the business, right? He's been through it. He knows when the expectations get high, that he said it doesn't change for him. Like, everybody that's coaching always wants to win every game. So the expectations are always the highest for the coaching. But externally, he understands that it becomes not good enough just to get to the playoffs after you've done it 5 years in a row. You become your own worst enemy.
Well, yeah. Right? And you're also at the ceiling of a salary cap. I mean, that's the other part.
True.
This is a team, and this is a franchise that was never in that situation. Now they hover at the top like the big boys that we used to talk about. Their payrolls, when little old Nashville was spending half the money they were spending.
And it's so difficult to win because of the salary cap, and there's so many teams that are not that different, right?
Well, it's like what Brian Boucher told us on New Year's Eve.
Tampa Bay could be open too.
He said,
and there's another Cooper, there's another great coach.
I mean, I guess if they fall on their face again,
I mean, they're kind
Darren,
of in,
John Cooper is a great coach, but he is facing exactly what Peter Laviolette faced the year after they won the President's Trophy. What's going on? You're not winning? You're not going to have 120 points?
Yep.
What's wrong? What's the deal? Is it time to change?
They're coming off getting swept in the first round.
That is what everybody's talking about in Tampa.
Yeah.
And that, I don't think that's fair, but that is the nature of the business, right?
And here's the other thing that you got to consider, and I think we all look at this, but you have to factor this in. David Poile, the last thing he has to do in his Hall of Fame career is win a cup. And he's more closer to the end of his career than the beginning. So I think that puts pressure. I mean, he's like, I've put this thing together to win now, and something's not working, so I got to make changes, because he doesn't, you know, and I get it. He doesn't know how many more shots he's going to have at it. So he wants to win that cup. So I think that ramps up the pressure a little bit for everybody in the organization.
It's unprecedented.
To perform.
It's unprecedented, the pressure, I think.
Yeah.
With the window, with the cap, the way the whole thing works. And David Poile, you could tell in his voice yesterday how this was not how he usually rolls. It's just his emotions. You can tell. He didn't want to
have to do it, but he felt like this was what had to be done. And I don't think a lot of people disagree, right? I think we can all see why we all, you know, we see in the moment why he felt like he did, and you know, we'll see. Time will tell whether it was the right decision or not. But I think they needed a shakeup.
Yeah,
they needed a shakeup.
We'll come back, close out first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Thank you, Trevor. We agree. Jeff Fisher coming up to kick off the second hour of the program. David Poyle at 11:30. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him at high noon. Ian Eagle, at 1 o'clock to begin the fourth and final hour here on this Wednesday. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. I wanted to ask you guys, because you threw out, Willie, you were a little surprised that Peter Laviolette spoke with Pierre LeBrun, you know, this close to what just happened. In fact, by the way, his first quote in this article was, "I don't know if getting fired will ever surprise me because of the profession. When you're expected to win and you're expected to help your team be successful," that was literally the first quote by Peter Laviolette. But I'm going to ask both of you this. You said we have David Poyle coming up at 11:30. Do you think he's been bracing for this? Do you think he was bracing, or do you think he was surprised when you guys got back from Southern California?
You mean Peter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Barry knew, right? It's well known. Barry knew well before the season was over.
He said it.
That he was gone. I mean, he's told us that.
He said it at the podium.
If you remember, things changed. Like, they just started scoring all of a sudden. Everybody's like, well, you know, what's going on? Where's this offense been? It's because Barry didn't care. He knew it was
right. It
was coming to an end. So he knew at the end of the year he was done.
Well, Barry Trotz had a going away press conference after.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting. And he was very open, like he always is, in media settings. I mean, he probably says more than he should sometimes, but he said he kind of knew. He said there were markers during the season, things that had happened every season that started to not happen, and he kind of saw the writing on the wall. So I can't speak for Peter Laviolette.
He's been asked the question about the pressure from Adam Vingan, and he answered it differently. We made a point to bring that up. He answered it differently than he did a month ago.
He said no.
A month and a half ago. It was completely different. It was, I'm not going to get into that right now.
But I don't read too much into what he says in press conferences because he's very guarded. And he's trying to say as little as he possibly can. So sometimes I think he's just trying to make a throwaway line.
Right.
Just so he's not answering the question.
But if the answer was no, then just say no. Because you've already said no. He said no the first time.
Why change your answer?
Because I think the answer was clearly not no.
Which is I'm not getting into it right now.
That's why I'm asking.
I mean, he answered the question without answering it, in my opinion.
But as he said in the article with Peter, with Pierre LeBrun, that he is always, you know, to me, if I were to say, you know, how would I answer that question, I would say that there's always pressure, right? And that he more or less said it in this article, that there's always pressure to win, especially when the expectations start to rise every year.
Right, but he never chose to answer it that way.
Right, he didn't. And so he's more Belichickian with his press conference style, right, than some.
Right, but to Chase's point, he could have easily shot it down again by
saying no.
But that's not how he rolls, man.
He's already said no. He said no in an earlier press conference.
It was kind of a blow-off answer. Which is, after games, he is not going to get, he's not going to wax poetic about anything, really. I mean, not very much, especially not
certainly
anything that has to do
losses.
With him. Certainly not anything that has to do with him. Like, he'll talk about a player that's playing well. He will not ever undercut a player in a press conference setting. So, getting back to the original question.
I'm just saying, if he was bracing for this, he's been letting his mind go there.
He's been in this league for a long time.
You painted the picture with Pierre LeBrun. That's if you're in shock. That's why I'm asking the question. If you're in shock, you probably need more than 48 hours before you're doing interviews.
Well, listen.
And if the fact that you're doing interviews tells me, just reading the room, doing this 20-plus years, maybe he was bracing for this. Maybe he was already preparing for what was about to happen, and that's why he's talking so early. He had already gone there.
I think the answer can be both. I think he was preparing for it, but also still up to the last minute, because I saw him. I was on the plane. They were preparing. I mean, they were looking at video, and they were meeting about the next opponent and going back through the game the night before, just like they always do.
Look, well, I would expect nothing less.
Right. So the answer, I think, can be both, right? You're staying in. You're fully in until you're not in. But I think part of his mind, naturally, having been through the experiences he's had, knows that it's a business and anything is possible.
Yeah, I definitely think he knew. I think past experiences have taught him what to look for and to expect. And, you know, he praises David Poyle and said they talked, you know, more than once a day, which I'm sure is true. And I'm sure there were some candid conversations. And I think he just realized that whatever message he was delivering wasn't being received by everybody. And as a coach, when that starts to happen, then you know that you're probably not coming back from that. That's just unfortunately how it works, that you've had some guys that just don't want to hear it from you anymore, and you're not going to get those guys back. And if you can't change the room, then you have to change the coach. And that was your theory that you threw out there yesterday, yeah. And I think it's spot on.
I just think coaches know.
Of course
our next guest.
Right, and I want to ask him.
He knew.
I want to ask him.
I just think coaches know. They do. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Being around talking to enough coaches over the years, I just think they know. They you know, whatever they're doing, look, you can't just stop working. I mean, him preparing, that doesn't surprise me. I'm asking about what's going on upstairs. I'm talking about what's going on in your head privately. I just think they know.
And
I think he knew.
But it's like we know in our lives of when something's ending or something's changing. Like when you have enough experience, you know. You can look at something and know this is probably about to end or about to change.
Or sometimes you can be blindsided.
Well, that too.
Yeah. Both can happen.
Both have happened.
We'll come back. Second hour, Jeff Fisher and David Poyle. All coming up in the 11 o'clock hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.